David Gregg is one of Scotland's top playwrights, and therefore he is a hardy perennial at the Edinburgh Festival and Fringe. He's kindly granted us an interview today. And first of all, David, I thought it might be interesting to hear about your views about your personal relationship with the Edinburgh Festival and Fringe every August.
Well, of course, my personal relationship is more than just as a playwright or indeed director, because when I was growing up in Edinburgh, it was to a large extent my theatre education, in that we're very lucky in Edinburgh, we have the Traverse and the Lyceum, but actually compared to a city like London or New York or wherever, really, obviously, we don't have that much theatre. But then every August, all of a sudden, all this incredible work from all around the world, both, at the high-end work that was being brought in by the official festival, particularly standing out in my mind would be work by Lepage or Peter Stein or Ningawa and these sort of people. I also was given access to, you know, it could be student companies doing Beckett. It meant I could see whatever, you know, in some senses, whatever my imagination was leading me to as a young person. But then, of course, after that, it's much more as a writer that I have a relationship with the festival, and then now it works the other way around. It's, you know, I do my plays very often in Scotland, and that's great, and they get some coverage, but the festival is a chance for me to open my work out to an audience who not necessarily either Scots or from Edinburgh or the rest of Scotland, but, you know, who come from very far afield, and that in turn means that very often these people take my plays away with them, and it's often in the past resulted in my work being done elsewhere. So it's a very important, and I feel very, very fortunate to be able to be part of it.
You've written for both the festival and the Fringe in the last few years. Do you consciously write in a different style if you're writing for the Edinburgh International Festival rather than, I hate to say just the Fringe, but just the Fringe?
No, I don't actually, and in all the instances that I've worked with the festival, it's been a case of them coming in to a project that in some senses was already emerging. Obviously, one takes notice of what one's doing, and when I did San Diego, for example, I was acutely conscious that the production values had to be absolutely of the highest. But having said that, I'm acutely conscious working at the Traverse that the production values have to be of the highest. I think the only difference I've found is that when you're working at the official festival, you have to be prepared to take a beating, in the sense that it does seem to be that for the last 10 years or so, there's a complex critical relationship, shall we say, between some of the broadsheet press and the Edinburgh International Festival's theatre programming, and Scottish work has certainly taken the brunt of that, and I've been part of that in some ways. So, you know, there are some dispiriting moments in some way. I think a show like San Diego, I hope it's not considered blowing my own trumpet to say, I genuinely believe had that show been a Traverse show on the Fringe, I think we would have been responded to with some excitement, whereas when we were put on the festival, there's a certain sense of who do you think you are? And the result was, you know, I think we took rather an unfair beating. And, of course, we're only on for 3 nights at the festival, so that can be disappointing. Having said that, the scale of coverage that you get and the privilege of the opportunity is enormous, and I would certainly never turn it down if given the chance. But when I look, for example, at Anton Nielsen this year, whose play I'm greatly looking forward to, you know, I'm partly with envy that he's on that stage that I love, but also partly with a great deal of relief that I'm not in his boots and not facing that legion on the first night that you know, can be so frightening sometimes.
This year, the play that you're doing is I've got a telephone going off here. This year, the play that you're doing. Don't worry, Dominic will edit it out. This year, the play that you're doing is a one-man production of, I think it was a book, a prose book, about the Palestinian experience in Israel. Do you want to tell us a little bit about when the Bulbul stopped singing and how and why you came over it and worked on it?
The When the Bulbul Stopped Singing is a diary originally by a Palestinian human rights lawyer and writer called Raja Shahada, who lives in Ramallah, and he was in Ramallah at the time in 2001 when the Israeli army invaded the city and occupied it for a month. He kept a diary of that experience, which he published a couple of years ago, called When the Bulbul Stopped Singing, a reference to the fact that the firing of the guns in that period frightened the birds and they literally stopped singing for a period when they would normally. I came across the book because I knew Raja from other connections I had with Palestine, and I thought the book was tremendous, and I immediately had a feeling that it was appropriate for a one-person show and that it was appropriate for the Traverse in the festival. It seemed to connect with a tradition of sort of testimony work that the Traverse has hosted during the festival, and the show itself seemed appropriate for the diary seemed appropriate for a one-person show because it's primarily about a man trapped in his room. He literally can't go out of the house, and that seemed obviously to lend itself to that kind of representation. So that's really how it began, and then I worked with Philip Howard, who I've worked with before, Catherine Mendelssohn at the Traverse, the dramaturg there, and Raja, to adapt the diaries for this performance, which, you know, was a great challenge for me because, of course, I'm used to working in dialogue, and you know, it's not the first one-person show that I've done, but certainly it's the first for a long, long time, and very, very interesting process as a result.
Do you worry that the Palestinian problem is so politically emotive that there could be people who say, "What's it got to do with you? Why are you involving yourself in this?"
Well, no, it doesn't worry me because I think that what the show is really primarily about is it's about the question of representation, and it's about the way in which the Palestinians in particular are represented, whether it's by Arab television stations, Israeli, the West, whatever. They're the people upon whom, if you like, the most burden of representation has been put, and what Raja is doing in his diary is trying to, if you like, write himself into humanity so that he's not an image, he's not a picture, he's not a statistic, he's a person, a fully rounded person. And in a sense, all I'm doing is aiding him further in that process by helping to create a stage representation of a Palestinian. But of course, the other side is that I have a connection because I worked in Ramallah myself on another show some time ago, and I've also worked with young Palestinian writers trying to help them to write and develop plays. And I also have a connection with a company called Inad who work theatre for young people there. So for me, I mean, it's not a question of why am I involved. I mean, I'm involved because I have friends there, but also, you know, it felt to me that to use my skills to adapt this person's work was a way in which it's not really about David Gregg, it's about Raja Shahada, and it's about his experience, not mine.
This place seems eminently portable. Are there any plans for transfers at the moment?
There isn't a plan for transfer at the moment. I hope very much that it can transfer. I think conditions, as you say, are right for that. It's not an expensive show to transfer, and it's been created. Well, the brilliant thing about festival shows, of course, is at the Traverse, is that they're created to be, you know, literally put up in an hour, you know. So the result of that means it as you say, it should be transferable. But of course, we need someone, you know, to in London or wherever it may be to take us, and we're in discussion about that just now.
What about your other work? I know we met a year or so ago, well, it must be exactly a year ago, actually, and you were talking about, I think it was 8,000 metres. Where's that one got to? I know you've worked a lot on translations of late as well, so what are you up to at the current time?
8,000 metres was staged earlier in the year in the tramway in Glasgow. Went really well, actually. I was very, very pleased with the show. The nature of it involved people actually climbing, literally on climbing walls. I mean, it was rather a spectacular piece, mean that it's not easily transferable. We are looking to do it again, actually quite possibly at next year's Edinburgh Festival. We're very much hoping to stage it in a there's a quarry near Edinburgh that is a fantastic natural amphitheatre with incredible rock. I mean, it's an amazing place. We're hoping to try and stage it there, but whether that happens or not is slightly in the lap of the gods. But otherwise, the next piece I have that people will be able to see is hopefully quite an interesting piece, a play called Pyrenees, which is going to be directed by Vicky Featherstone as her, I think, last show for Payne's Plough, which will be on both in Scotland and then subsequently in London around, I think, March time next year. And it's a play that I suppose one's always, I mean, I'm always passionate about the play I've most recently done, but it's a play that's very special to me, not least because in some senses it's a sequel to a play called The Cosmonaut's Last Message, which I wrote some years ago and which Vicky also directed the first production of.
Having brought us on to Vicky Featherstone, she's recently been appointed as the first director of the National Theatre of Scotland. I wondered what your views are on the fact of having a National Theatre of Scotland and also on Vicky's appointment to that key role.
Answering the second question first, I think it's terrific that Vicky's been appointed. To some extent, I would think that, having worked with her so much, but because I've worked with her so much, I know that she's a creative person. She's she's somebody who is not afraid of the radical, not afraid of the contemporary. At the same time, she's a very astute theatre thinker, very astute political thinker, actually, you know, both in a rehearsal room in terms of the strategy that she's brought to bear at Payne's Plough, which I think it's fair to say she's, you know, really transformed over the years that she's been there, to a major player in British theatre. She's going to bring that to Scotland, and I think we're really going to benefit. Of course, she's already worked with a great many Scottish writers, Douglas Maxwell, myself, Linda McLean, Stephen Greenhorn. So, in that regard, I think she's a terrific appointment. As to the National Theatre, it's going to be a good thing. I profoundly believe that. I know that there are a great many risks attached to it. I've characterised it as an elephant let loose upon the Macha. The Macha is a Scots Gaelic word meaning a particularly beautiful area of land that you get on the Western Islands between just above the beach. In the summer, it's covered in the most beautiful wildflowers, but it's terribly, terribly fragile ecology. And if you like, in my analogy, Scottish theatre, which has evolved you know, over maybe 50 years, it's a very delicate infrastructure. The National Theatre represents almost a doubling of that money. So Vicky, you know, is riding this great behemoth into the infrastructure, and you know, it's bound to cause ructions. There's bound to be a moments of change over the next couple of years, not least in the fact that there's going to be probably certainly a huge increase in the number of productions taking place in Scotland. That's going to make demands on technicians, on actors, on writers, and so on, that, you know, we'll all have to adjust to how we think. Writers, everybody, we're all going to have to adjust. Vicky's going to have to adjust. It's going to be a big time of change, but I believe we'll come out of that with a really exciting institution, something that hopefully will be the envy of Europe. You know, and that's certainly something that I think Vicky's capable of enabling.
Is the intention that it will just focus on Scottish writing, or is it going to be like the National Theatre in London, where it will focus on lots of Shakespeare, lots of writing from all nations?
It's a great question. I think that in the first instance, obviously, I think the duty will be to create and enable the Scottish repertoire, but I think I'm certainly very hopeful that the Scottish repertoire is narrow in that regard. It's also there for actors to get their teeth into classics, and of course, one of the most interesting things is the role of translation. Liz Lochhead has done some amazing translations of Moliere. John Byrne recently did an adaptation of Chekhov. So in that sense, we have a great advantage of maybe being able to wed some of our contemporary writers to some of the great classic writers, whether it be Greek or Russian or German. Of course, the interesting thing then becomes with a British theatre more broadly. So what will be the Scottish National Theatre's relationship, for example, to the plays of just taking somebody off the top of my head, Howard Barker or Harold Pinter or Sarah Kane, you know. And I think that's something which will be a very interesting thing for Vicky and her team to negotiate. But again, I hope something negotiated creatively. And of course, the people who the National Theatre is there to serve, it's not writers, it's there to serve the public. And it's about what do the Scottish public most want to see, what do they most need to see. And that's, you know, that judgment that she's going to have to make.
The difference between what people want to see and what people need to see could be absolutely intriguing, I think.
Absolutely, and also I hope will be the cause of some controversy, because I think that, you know, if a National Theatre has any purpose, at least one of its purposes is to create controversy. I think that what Nick Heitner did, for example, with Henry V was a really interesting and bold piece of casting and programming by taking you know, a great icon of Englishness and casting a great black actor in the role. And I think that's the sort of imaginative questioning of identity that somebody like Vicky is capable of and ought to do, and I hope that will do in Scotland and maybe shake us up a little bit.
David Gregg, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.